Solomon, who's here today, were co-authors on the paper that I'm going to be discussing today, along with Dr. Wendy Max, who couldn't join us today because of the glorious parade. Yay. Go Giants. And Linda Gibal, who also couldn't join us today. But I'm going to talk about a study that we did that was published in Health Affairs in 2011, last November. I have some copies of a fact sheet that NRDC, I spend most of my time at the Natural Resources Defense Council, we have some copies of a fact sheet based on this work in the back. We looked at the health-related costs of events that climate change is projected to increase, make worse, that are health-related in future, and we thought that this was really important to look at because, even as I have no financial conflicts to disclose, now or when the paper was done, we're in the midst of this series of years, starting with 2011. We began the work on the paper before 2011. We began it looking at a time when we were looking at flooding in North Dakota, in the northern Mississippi River basin system. But then it was followed by two notable years in the United States that were reflective, of course, of conditions around the world. But in 2011, we thought that we were, you know, breaking records, and indeed we were then. A year of extreme weather events that were, there were $14 billion events charted by NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, from heat to drought to floods to snow, wind storms. The estimate then ranged to $53 billion. It's now up towards $60 billion, and it's part of this longer-term trend. You know, the hottest decade, last decade on record since record keeping began in the late 1890s. Then 2012 happened, last summer. We broke the records again in terms of extreme weather events. Hottest June through August, hottest July, hottest month ever on record, drought across two-thirds of the United States. And that turns into cost, damage costs in terms of agriculture, economic impacts for households, for communities, translates into mental health impacts, translates into health impacts, respiratory health, water impacts, all of these, and wildfires related to heat, to drought, all of these we understand as a public health community, cascading public health effects. But as we look at and hear about the tallies of the damage costs of extreme weather events, climate change is fueling many of those events, heat, extreme rainfall, storms, drought, wildfires, notably. The health costs are missing. We asked around. We asked the insurance companies. We asked our colleagues at NOAA, who do a tremendous job. The health damage costs are missing from these tallies, and we think that that's an important absence. Yes, because we're public health people, but because leaders like Dr. Benjamin, executive director of APHA, and many others have said this is an issue with the human face. It's one of the biggest public health issues we face. It unifies so many of the other issues that each of us already work on, and it's going to get worse in the future. So we need to get our arms around the damage costs, because we're most concerned about human pain and suffering, but from a policy point of view, we believe that dollars may translate into some sort of policy movement in future. That's the question that we can pose to each other and to our fellow panelists as we continue. So, again, especially in the U.S., we haven't looked at the health damage costs. There have been some efforts internationally, the work of Dr. Chris Ebi, some others who have looked more internationally at costs of infectious diseases, diarrheal illnesses, heat, waterborne diseases in an international context, but none zooming in on our domestic U.S. frame. So we reached out to our colleagues at the University of California, at Berkeley, at San Francisco, who couldn't join us, but to try and come up with a uniform methodology to try and get our arms around what are the costs of current day, just looking at current events that are extreme weather events, that are outbreaks, but that are representative of categories that are projected to worsen with climate change, just so that we can begin to estimate where we're at in terms of costs. And we did this by a case study sort of approach. And again, these are current day costs. We selected six of these case study events that happened between 2002 and 2009. We chose high-end events, like not the most extreme events in each category. So in the way of a of a hurricane season or event, we didn't select Hurricane Katrina and Rita. We didn't choose the most extreme. We selected, as you can see, a Florida hurricane season in 2004. In the interest of time, I'm not going to enumerate these, but most of them were sort of site-specific local events. Ozone air pollution on the national stage was the one that was a national type of event, climate change related. But what we did was we selected events that are published in the peer review literature or in government agency reports, events that are already written up for which there are already estimates of mortality, of hospitalizations, which we could then work with our economist colleagues to try and come up with one standard economic valuation method. So these are the six that we looked at, and this is beginning to try and map out what we did in the way of this health cost assessment methodology. We couldn't look at everything. The dashed lines represent what we couldn't, at this point, put into the cost valuation. We know that effects on environment and health of wildlife, zoonotic diseases, totally important, but that wasn't in this first iteration. We really looked at mortality and morbidity. I'll tell you in more detail what those health measures were in terms of morbidity. We looked at short-term physical and some mental health effects, not longer term. They're entirely important, but they weren't part of this first look. And I'll talk a little bit about, more specifically, how we dealt with the premature deaths stemming from, associated with these six case study events, and then our main morbidity measures: hospitalizations, emergency department visits, outpatient visits, and some cost for prescription meds. And we used a combined approach that was cost of illness and a value of statistical life valuation approach. The slide's a little busy, but this was one of the challenges of doing this work. It's a pretty rich sort of methodology you have to bring together. It's tough to summarize into like one or two top line bullet points, the methodology. But I'll try and rapidly, fairly step through, because I really want to save time, and I'm sure Miriam does, for conversation about this. So again, we use the published health outcome data. It's not new data, but we took the values that were in the studies and extrapolated when values weren't available for emergency department visits. We used the medical expenditure panel survey values to do that, to go from hospitalization to emergency department visit data or outpatient visit data when we didn't have it. But we used standard methodologies to do that in each case. Other medical expenses included, in some cases, prescription meds. In the Health Affairs article, there's a very specific step-through methodology for each of the six case studies that we'll detail for those of you who are interested, just how we did it in each area. And there's a link. This is a subscription journal, but there's a link in the fact sheet in the back where, for the time being, you can grab this Health Affairs article for free. And for mortality, we used a value of statistical life valuation methodology. We used a mid-range value from a whole range of studies that had been in use by EPA. $7.9 million was the value we used. These are the co-authors on this study that I mentioned before, and the title of the study as it appeared in Health Affairs in 2011. This is a map giving you a sense of our efforts to select a range of the case study sites that would really be across the country, so to try and include everyone to the best of our ability. So you can see the California wildfires were in Southern California, a California heat wave across the whole state in 2006, air pollution across the whole country in 2002, a West Nile virus outbreak in Louisiana, Florida hurricane season, flooding, river flooding in North Dakota. So we tried to make it speak to people across the nation. We were surprised at our findings. As you can see, a range of from $14 to $40 billion in health-related costs just from those six events. So this is not the fabric of all of the events that occurred in all locations between 2002 and 2009 of all of the types that could have occurred. This is to give, for those of you who are interested in the step through of the specific methodology, this is how we did it, for one case study, the California wildfire case study, which was done in 2003, and shows you how we went from the original reports, which were a governor's report and one published study on the links between wildfire smoke and respiratory and cardiovascular hospitalizations, and then moved through an extrapolation method to a morbidity cost methodology. I think in the interest of time, we can certainly, you feel free to ask questions about this, but I think I'm going to proceed to preserve discussion time. This again shows how the dollar values that were estimated broke out. And we were surprised at the $14 billion total on the bottom row, farthest right column. But you can see how the different events sort of stacked up, not to be coarse. But these are billions of dollars worth of costs. This, we also had an upper range of $40 billion of costs. However you put this, whether it's 14 or 40, this is a lot of money that's not being included in our discussions of what climate change is costing in terms of extreme weather events. And, you know, we only have to look at, I'm sorry, what's happening in my home, New York City, another extreme weather event. This is, events of this type are the face of climate change. More extreme weather events, are we prepared to incur more of the types of costs that are involved in this, health-related costs to deal with both infrastructure, which this is so daunting, but also health-related costs, short-term, long-term. There's lots of challenges in terms of where we go from here. Lack of basic surveillance data. We relied on the case, the studies and reports that supported those six case studies, but we would love to have a national surveillance tracking system that supported looking at the rest of the country, the rest of the years. We need that desperately. We need that now. We need to be able to say to one another what happened this last summer in terms of heat-related mortality and morbidity. We can't report that in a sort of real-time way yet. And I know that we all want to get there, but we need to encourage our leaders to make that a priority. There's no uniform method of assigning costs. We're trying to get there. And the question of attribution, in a way, that remains as a scientific concern. But the bigger challenge is how to go from these half dozen case studies to the hundreds of types of events that are climate change related that we're really having to endure. There's a whole range of costs that we could have looked at. But these kind of suggest themselves as some of the next that we might look at. Pollens and allergy, it's been estimated that in the U.S. there's $32 billion at least in pollen and allergy-related direct medical costs. There have been some notable waterborne disease outbreaks that could be sort of cost-valued foodborne diseases. The three at the bottom may turn out to be the real enormously costly in terms of both pain and suffering and dollar value types of events. But we just don't know how to get there. There's been some tremendous work done in Australia. The report here, Climate of Suffering, recently came out. They've had to deal with heat, drought, flooding, wildfires in recent years that has motivated a lot of this work. We did, at NRDC, get a lot of attention on the health cost study when it came out. I think there were, I'm going to look at the number, because we were surprised. We got 74,000 online impressions, as our communications people call it, like hits and pickups. We were immediately asked to speak to a governor of New Jersey, poor New Jersey, conference, because they're trying to put together an adaptation plan on climate change. We were asked to do webinars for faith-based groups. The study was cited in a Senate committee hearing in August of this year. But has policy changed? No. But maybe studies like this can, in all of what we do, can help move things along. We created a map to try and make the health effects of climate change local. People can zoom in on your zip code, on your state, and look locally to try and go from the global to local. So just some of the questions that we may want to collectively get to in the time that remains, like what do these cost and other types of valuation studies, like what makes them the type of work that really does motivate policy? When does new information become the kicker that really drives a new type of health policy? In future, we really want to try and come up with more consensus on valuation methods, definitely do whatever we can to get our tracking beefed up, amped up, improved, and more support for preparedness on climate change and extreme weather events is of the utmost, and reducing carbon pollution and moving towards more efficient, more cleaner, healthier energy sources of the utmost. Maybe we can start looking at to what extent the most vulnerable populations are exposed and affected by such events. That would be an interesting dimension in future. And also, to what extent do multiple exposures, multiple events, reduce community's ability to respond. That bears on health, you know, tremendously. So I'll end with this. We created last year in December a map where we tracked the extreme weather events that happened in 2012. In 2011. We're going to update this soon for 2012. But in future, it would be my hope that we would be able to at some point track not only those climate-related extreme events, but also the health effects and someday the associated costs, so that we can have this conversation not just with all of you who joined us here, but with the communities that are affected and the policymakers that can hopefully help communities reduce the costs and reduce the effects. So thank you very much to all of the people who helped us put this work together, to the fellow panelists and APHA for all their work on this, and I invite you all to look more closely at the health affairs paper and take a copy of the fact sheet in the back. And thank you very much for coming today. Probably both of the factors that you mentioned play into it, but it's just, for those reasons and more, not yet a priority. And I think it's up to people like us to demand that preparedness becomes more of a priority, that climate change, progressive climate change policy is a priority, that it has to be, and leadership. I mean, there's been some really, fuel efficiency, that there's been some great strides, but on making climate change a speakable, absolutely top priority moving forward, we can all keep doing what we do, but, advance it in every conversation. And preparedness is, so important. We see it right now. You see it, I know, where you live. I don't know if this is exactly what you're talking about, but at least half of that curve, I'm thinking of a graphic from Munich Re, which is a big reinsurance company, along with Swiss Re. They've been very interested for many years in climate change because they end up paying the price, literally. And I know that they've just done an update of worldwide, and they do break out North America, weather-related disasters. And they have one category in which they've broken out climate-related. And in North America, the costs are climbing at, factors greater than any other of their regions that they look at. But the health costs, they don't track. We've talked to Munich and Swiss Re. They don't include it as yet. Maybe they could, because they're reinsurers. It'd be interesting to watch those on the same graph. That's just a great idea, because I know that Kaiser has done a lot of great work and training and workforce training and on climate change. They're interested in this. So maybe it's a great idea. I mean, I don't have an answer to your question overtly, but maybe it's just a terrific idea to try and find a few medical insurers to come on board, but we haven't as yet identified those colleagues. Future work, if you have any ideas, names, please share. We'll get in touch with them. Thank you.
Kim had a nice slide that laid out some of these broader questions about how do these collective studies impact policies that are being made, policies that are going to be coming in the future. Do we have additional tools? What do we need to better incorporate this kind of into our policy making in terms of protecting public health? I'm going to open the floor.
You all look so formal.
any additional questions? Any additional thoughts? Well, then I'm going to ask a question. I'll use the microphone. So, one of the cross-cutting issues, and one of the, Dr. Sheffield actually started, is this persuasive? Are these tools that are put in some of the papers, are they persuasive? Have they been persuasive? Are there things we need to be doing in the analysis phase that would make them more persuasive?
I think in the occupational safety and health field, they are being used because there are a lot of businesses that are concerned about rising costs, and so if you can make a cost-benefit assessment of some new safety equipment or a new way of organizing work, and then show that to the employer, show that to the boss, what may happen to your workers' compensation costs, how your productivity may increase as a result of these interventions. That's a very big, growing field of research that uses cost-benefit analysis. So I think that individual firms are definitely interested in that type of work.
Kim, I think that that it's not going to be like a national, although I said it could be. I think it's too big almost to bite off it. Initially, a national analysis of the health costs of climate change, and it may be smarter to go for local, city or regional specific, because that's the sort of the scale at which policies are really happening now that are progressive. But the challenge is still getting the data to do that work and then do a local cost valuation. So in this work, we worked where the data was available. So if we had more data, it would probably be a national database, and then it would be a smorgasbord of where we could choose like the most policy, strategic places to work where you had partners, that then it'd be like an open field. But right now we're limited.
There's a question here.
I just want to comment on the cost-benefit issues in occupational medicine, where I think that there's sort of a competing sort of view out what kind of analysis you focus on. For example, it seems like there's so much in that literature on, what are the costs of having employees with chronic disease and how does that translate to workers' compensation costs. And those type of cost-benefit analysis, to me, really keep the focus off of where we can make, broad changes that would, help reduce the cost and burden of disease as a whole. So when we look narrowly at cost-benefit of, are obese employees more likely to have injuries, or, what happens among, people who have a pre-existing disease. So I think it's tricky, to sort of guide the focus on the right kind of analysis where you have a specific exchange. So I don't know if you have any sort of comments about, those types of analyses and how that translates into policy change.
Well, methodology can cut both ways. And I've seen those reports on cost of obesity that you referred to and chronic disease, and so you can say, maybe employers are not going to them benefits of certain changes. For example, the one of the most dangerous places to work is at a convenience store late at night. You get killed. And so there have been studies to look at if you have two employees at that convenience store, it's far less likely to be robbed. So the question is, okay, what's the cost? You know, it sounds horrible. But make that good. But there have been those studies, and so have been replaced in some areas. So the methodology can be used both ways, and you just have to be careful and cognizant of that. And then, you know, what the counter arguments are about, okay, do we really want to, you know, have firms discriminating against the obese, or people with chronic disease, or for that matter, smokers? And it becomes kind of a legal issue.
To your question, about whether or not the type of analysis we're doing is effective, I think it really depends on what the stakeholder is. And I don't have a whole lot of experience with whether or not it's actually translating into action, but I but a couple of anecdotes. One is in the area of chronic disease impacting employees. Had a reality check about how much they're spending on employees, and they're implementing an entirely new employee health program motivated by the current income cost. So, in that case, this data directly motivates the potential employer. I think it's a little bit more of a stretch when we go to talking about climate, talking about trying to drive certain federal policies. But I think there is a lot to be said in finding these good marriages, either with groups like Munich, Greg, or Swiss, right, who have this major economic incentive to figure out what the risk is and account for it. So they are in a frame and prepared facility, or in health insurance. I think Kathy's suggestion was fantastic. And so if we could figure out who the key stakeholders are and you know, what their motivations, what their buttons are.
Just one quick thought on obesity. A few months ago, Bill O'Reilly writing a railing against the cost of obesity. And so, not concerned about obesity per se, but the cost, okay, why is he having to pay more? So let's try to figure out a way to interventions to reduce obesity. So, you know, the methodology can be used in ways we might prefer, but it's just a matter of some talent and imagination to use it that.
Additional thoughts before we finish? Thank you all for coming. Thanks again to our panelists. It was great presentations.